It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It was the defining promise of Barack Obama's presidency.
If you like the plan you have, you can keep it.
That promise, repeated 36 times, made the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, the law better known as Obamacare, the president's most contentious domestic initiative. At town halls, critics vented their anger, in part stirred by the Tea Party movement.
Strike it down.
Which arose to oppose what it called socialized medicine. Even a bipartisan brainstorming session at Blair House saw the president upbraid his 2008 opponents.
We're not campaigning anymore. The election's over.
To cover the 44 million Americans who lacked health insurance, the 900-page measure expanded Medicaid subsidies, offered online exchanges embraced by 39 states, fined non-compliant employers, and penalized uninsured people who failed to sign up. The measure also allowed children to remain on parents' plans through age 26 and banned insurers from denying coverage on the basis of pre-existing conditions.
Hi, everybody.
When Republicans mustered 41 votes against Obamacare, the Democrats employed the parliamentary tactic of reconciliation, requiring only 51 votes for passage.
And we don't know exactly what's in the fix bill. Do you?
No, we will, by the time the vote has taken place, not only I will know what's in it, you'll know what's in it.
The House Speaker memorably reversed that.
So that you can find out what is in it.
Ultimately, Obamacare passed with no Republican support and was signed into law in March 2010. As its provisions took effect, the online exchanges suffered pervasive glitches, and an estimated 4 million people lost their plans, a violation of the president's promise for which he begrudgingly apologized.
And you know, that's on me.
More than 20 million Americans have received coverage under the law.
For the first time in our history, more than 90% of Americans are insured.
But it has been dogged by problems.
And then the people are out there busting it, sometimes 60 hours a week, wind up with their premiums doubled and their coverage cut in half. It's the craziest thing in the world.
Regardless of how the effort to repeal and replace Obamacare goes, it will go down in history as one of the most ambitious White House projects of the post-war era. And if it is discarded by the Trump administration, it will also go down as one of the shortest lived.
All right, that was James Rosen on Fox last night. This is Sandy Rios in the morning with you, and that is what we're going to talk about today, almost the entire show. Let me remind you, it was not quite 8 years ago. When they passed Obamacare, remember the size of the bill, and you heard James remind us that Nancy Pelosi said, we'll have to pass the bill to find out what's in it. And of course, we have found out what's in it, and the American people have rejected it thoroughly. There may be some young people who have coverage for the first time who, you know, fancy that they're covered. But the truth is, just because you have a piece of paper that says that you have insurance does not mean you're going to get good coverage, that you're going to be able to find a doctor, that they're going to actually treat you for the problem. Just because you have a piece of paper does not guarantee good medical care. And what we are finding is that average Americans, a lot of middle class, you know, remember, the Obama administration was all about helping the middle class, which was a lie. This is not what the left does. The left is after the middle class to destroy it, just so long as you get that straight, because the middle class is the greatest threat to a powerful central government. But I digress. So the middle class has borne the brunt of this, seeing their premiums just escalate, breaking the backs of small businesses and families, and still not being able to get coverage. People have died because of this. I have friends, I could mention two right now, one with cancer, one with a heart attack, who have gotten terrible care as a result of being in a work situation where they have to rely on Obamacare. It has been a disaster. Each of you could tell a story. And you remember that the architect of Obamacare, Jonathan Gruber, in a video that was revealed after it was passed, said it only passed because of the, this is the architect, guy that wrote it, because of the stupidity of the American voter. I'm going to come back to more of that because we have a special guest in a second, but I want to, the point we want to talk about today is, remember that Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, the leadership in the House and the Senate, they thumped their chest and they campaigned personally on repeal and replace Obamacare. We're going to get rid of it. We're going to do away with it. And they had a vote. They voted repeatedly, over and over again. They even got a bill on President Obama's desk and he vetoed it to repeal this terrible bill. This is what they kept telling us. They were our champions, you see. And so we voted them into office. Many of you in various states voted for various Republicans because you trusted them, because you believed them. And now we are down to the wire. Donald Trump has said he wants to repeal and replace Obamacare. But what is happening behind the scenes? And this is what I want you to know. This is the headline. Republican leadership has no intention of repealing Obamacare. They are actually talking about keeping it in place, keeping the Cadillac tax in place, keeping the money they've taken in place so that they can create another kind of Obamacare, Obamacare Lite, some are calling it. We're going to talk about that, and with God's help, we're going to do something about this. That'll be the focus of our discussion today on the show. Meanwhile, back on planet Earth, maybe, too bad, sadly, in Chicago, more violence. A terrible story coming out of the west side of Chicago. Trace Gallagher tells it from Fox. Let's listen.
Megan, police believe the victim, who is mentally disabled, met a man that he knew and some others in a Chicago suburb, and that they drove him in a stolen car to the west side of Chicago, took him to a home, tied him up, taped his mouth, and began torturing him for between 24 and 48 hours. At least 30 minutes of the torture was streamed live on Facebook, and the woman who was taping acknowledges that she knows it is streaming live. During the video, which, as you say, is very hard to watch, they cut the man's clothing, saying they're going to get him naked and ask him to kiss the floor. Then they kick him, punch him, cut his scalp, and laugh about how much he's bleeding. Throughout the video, you can hear the four suspects go after Donald Trump and white people. Watch again.
Donald Trump, white people, what?
Film. Goof.
Yeah.
Monsters of the witch.
Yeah,
this
thing is flying.
Oh,
huh?
My monsters said this is not fun, y'all.
Later, they asked the victim to say how much he loves black people. Police are now investigating this as a possible hate crime and a possible kidnapping. They also say it could be a case of young people making stupid decisions. Here's Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson.
It's sickening. It's sickening. You know, it makes you wonder what would make individuals treat somebody like that. You know, so I've been a cop for 28 years, and I've seen things that you shouldn't see in a lifetime, but it still amazes me how you still see things that you just shouldn't.
Officers found the victim distressed and wandering the streets of West Chicago. They say he's out of the hospital and is being interviewed by detectives, but is having a very difficult time communicating. The four suspects, including at least two females, are all 18 years old.
All right, so, but they're not sure it's a hate crime. Of course it's a hate crime. Of course it's a hate crime. If this had happened to a black teen by 18-year-olds, there'd be no question about it. It would be the headlines. And, you know, it's not a matter of black and white. This is evil. This is just evil. I'm not a fan of hate crimes. I think that when you do this to anybody for any reason, it's wrong and you should be punished by the law. And it really doesn't make it worse because the persons perpetrating it are black, or the people that are victims are white, or vice versa. It is crime. It's evil. And, you know, this is how societies move to exterminating certain people groups. And we've discussed this before. It's been a while. But people are dehumanized. You know, the Jews were called pigs. They're still called pigs by the Arab, by the Muslim extremists. And they are dehumanized. And then it's easy to punish, torture, murder them, because they're not really people. They're not like us. They're unworthy. They're lesser class. And so this is really a manifestation of that. And so I'm sure you'll hear this over and over again today. This will be a big news story. Sadly for all of us, how in the world did we raise a generation of kids who have no soul? I just don't. And I think of the mother of this son You know, because I had a disabled daughter, I was just thinking the rage at somebody. You have to protect them. They're like a baby. And so you have to protect them in ways that you don't protect. You have to protect your normal children. And to think of the abuse of your child like that, it would be very hard. Oh, my goodness. I can't even imagine. So a lot of prayers for the people involved in that, including the soulless kids who did this to this disabled boy. Well, Catherine Herridge did a report last night, kind of a follow-up on that so-called Russian hacking. By the way, there was no hacking of our elections, no evidence whatsoever that any voting machines were altered, that the vote was changed at all. And there was no evidence that Russia was the, in fact, Julian Assange of WikiLeaks says that the Russians had nothing to do with the WikiLeaks that leaked to John Podesta's email that was so damning to Hillary Clinton. That doesn't mean the Russians aren't trying to hack and dismember and do what they're doing, do whatever they're doing in cyberspace. This is the nature of cyber warfare for all. In fact, the United States, I'm sure, is engaged in it as well. So it's not. I'm not saying they're not doing any cyber warfare. I'm sure that they are. But in this case, this is really fake news. But I'm really. Let's hear what Catherine's update was last night on Fox. Let's listen.
He's not exactly a bastion of truth and integrity.
In the PBS interview, CIA Director John Brennan cast doubt on the credibility of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who told Fox News the Russian government was not his source for the DNC and Clinton campaign emails.
I wouldn't, ascribe to any of these individuals who are making comments that it is providing the whole unvarnished truth. Again, this report is going to include what it is that we know about what happened. What was collected, what was disclosed.
Pressed on the hacker's intent, which usually requires intelligence from human spying or an intercepted phone call, Brennan promised specifics.
Do you think the motive of the Russians was to help Donald Trump?
That's one of the things that will be addressed inside of the report. I'm not going to address that in advance of its release.
In 2010, Assange's WikiLeaks worked with then-Army Private Bradley Manning to release several hundred thousand classified Defense Department documents, endangering sources and methods, according to a former FBI operative.
Sensitive intelligence is just not words on paper, but it's lives in danger.
At the time, Donald Trump told Fox's Brian Kilmeade the leaks were un-American.
I think it's disgraceful. You do think it's disgraceful?
This should be like death penalty or something.
In the new Fox interview broadcast Tuesday, Assange also claimed the theft of Clinton campaign manager John Podesta's emails was child's play.
Podesta gave out that his password was the word password. His own staff said, this email that you've received, this is totally legitimate. So this is something a 14-year-old kid could have hacked.
In a tweet, Mr. Trump picked up Assange's charge, saying the Democrats were careless and to blame. On Capitol Hill, the vice president-elect defended his boss.
Given some of the intelligence failures of recent years, the president-elect made it clear to the American people that he's skeptical about conclusions from the bureaucracy, and I think the American people hear him loud and clear.
All right, I have a lot to say about this, and I'll see if I can. First of all, Julian Assange is not a hero. He is not a hero, but my understanding from people that I know and trust is that he's honest. The leaks that he provided from the Podesta email were valid. They were true. They were real email. They weren't changed. They weren't altered. And so we can go with that. So you can listen to Julian Assange and take what he says, understanding that he's not, a choir boy. But John Brennan is of great suspicion to me. He's the head of the CIA director. And the headline this morning, the Wall Street Journal, is saying that Donald Trump plans to revamp a top U.S. spy agency. And I have to tell you that my friends on the inside say that that's badly needed, that the intelligence forces have been badly corrupted, that they are basically Obama forces at this point in time, and many of them even behind closed doors are pledged to destroying Donald Trump. So that's kind of the state of affairs. It's much more complex than that. I gave you the 20-second thumbnail sketch. But let me just tell you, there's trouble in River City when it comes to our intelligence sources. And perhaps Trump will bring some changes. We just pray that he has the right people whispering in his ear. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I love that story in Luke 15.
where Jesus tells the story of the good shepherd who leaves his 99 sheep to find the one lost. When that lost sheep is found, he calls his friends together and says, "Rejoice with me, I've found my lost sheep." Wow, what a great picture of God that is. Most people can understand a God who forgives sinners who crawl to him and beg for mercy. Most people can imagine a God who makes sinners grovel in the dirt and beg and plead for forgiveness. But a God who actually runs to search for sinners in order to forgive them? A God who seeks out rebels in order to save them? Little wonder we stand amazed at the love of Jesus. That Jesus leaves his large flock so that one sinner won't be lost? That shows the abundance of his care. This is Johnny Erickson Tada, and I welcome you to rejoice with me today in your wonderful Good Shepherd who found you.
What's your source of wisdom? Ultimately, my opinion matters little. And, sorry to say, neither does yours. This is Jim Garlow. But there is truth that does matter, biblical truth. Some will say, well, according to whose interpretation? The answer? According to the collective minds of authentic followers of God for the last 2,000 years. Others will argue, well, it's his interpretation against yours, right? No, the Bible was written plainly. Tearing up a baby in the womb is anti-biblical, for example. Redefining marriage is anti-biblical. Depriving people of expressing true creativity through excessive governmental control denies the integrity of the human spirit. It's anti-biblical. Economic taxes that break citizens' financial backs. It's anti-biblical. The Bible can spare us a lot of pain, personally and nationally, if we'll read it and follow it. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. Illegals will now get in-state tuition at Georgia public universities. The controversy stems from a 2008 state law that says non-citizens cannot pay the in-state rates unless they are legally in the state. A Mexican national who overstayed his visa challenged the law. A judge agreed. The ruling would allow illegals who received a special reprieve from deportation from the Obama administration to begin paying in-state tuition. So let's say a legal citizen of America lives in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Wants to attend college across the state line in Georgia. That person must pay out-of-state tuition. But non-citizens living in our nation illegally are afforded preferential treatment. How is that fair? This is one of the reasons why President-elect Trump will be taking the oath of office on January 20. Americans are tired of being treated as second-class citizens in their own nation. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Vice President-elect Mike Pence told Republicans they are all on one team, and starting January 20th, Inauguration Day, they will have a new coach, and they intend to hit the ground running.
The first order of business is to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Vice President-elect Pence was back on Capitol Hill for the first full workday of the 115th Congress and tweeted a photo of his meeting with House Republicans. His goal was firing up the GOP about moving forward on a new agenda.
We are 16 days away from the end of business as usual in Washington, D.C. Today, our message is very simple. Working with the leadership here in the House and in the Senate, we're going to be in the promise-keeping business.
As Pence was heading to Capitol Hill, President-elect Trump took to Twitter to warn Republicans must be careful in that the Dems own the failed Obamacare disaster with its poor coverage and massive premium increases, like the 116% hike in Arizona. Also, deductibles are so high that it is practically useless. Don't let the Schumer clowns out of this web. Massive increases of Obamacare will take place this year, and Dems are to blame for the mess. It will fall of its own weight. Be careful. President Chuck Schumer, the Senate Democratic leader, fired back.
Republicans will soon learn that you can't keep the good parts of the ACA and remove the rest of the law and still have it work.
Pence said he echoed Mr. Trump's social media message behind closed doors.
I admonished members of the House Republican Conference today. It's important that they remind the American people of what they already know about Obamacare, that the promises that were made were all broken.
And Speaker Paul Ryan said while repeal of the president's signature health care law would come swiftly, lawmakers will be careful to make sure consumers aren't hurt.
We want to make sure that as we give relief to people through Obamacare, we do it in a transition that doesn't pull the rug out from anybody during that transition period. That's the point that we're all trying to make.
As Republican leaders call for an orderly transition, what comes next is unclear.
Lawmakers are hoping to have the Obamacare repeal on President Trump's desk by February 20th. Before that, Pence said Mr. Trump will take a series of executive actions to start unraveling the law.
All right, that was Mike Emanuel of Fox last night. And I think, you know, probably the key sentence in there is that we just heard Paul Ryan saying, we don't want to pull the rug out. We want to do it in a way that doesn't pull the rug out. Well, let me tell you, they have plans to make sure the rug is not pulled out. And what their plans ultimately are, meaning the leadership in the House and Senate, is not really to do away with Obamacare. That should alarm you this morning. It will be a continuance of the same kind of duplicitous acts they have been doing for the last 8 years. Well, they pretend like they're doing something and they do nothing. All right, I've asked Daniel Horowitz to join us because Daniel understands this as much as anybody that I know. The procedures are very complex. All of the things, we want to break it down as much as we can and help you understand so that we can fight back, because we have to stop Congress from doing what they've been doing for the last 8 years. We've had it. Have we not? Have we not had it with this Congress who has done nothing but capitulate to Barack Obama? They've pretended for how many votes that they want to do away with Obamacare. They've taken these votes and then they go out and waive the number of times they voted and they get reelected and they go back. And now they have a chance to actually do it. And it looks like they're not going to do it. Daniel Horowitz is the senior editor of Conservative Review. He joins me this morning. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Oh, yes. Well, in many ways, it is a Happy New Year, but this is kind of a bump in the road and a big one, Daniel. Can you believe that they would have the audacity to even consider not fully repealing and replacing this?
Unfortunately, Sandy, I'm not surprised. I mean, it has been the official position of the Chamber of Commerce, which, as you know, pulls the strings of GOP leadership since 2013 to fix Obamacare, not to repeal it. Now, the headlines and the top-line messaging coming out of the GOP conference is, oh, we're repealing it. And most people think that's the case. The problem is that due to the semantics of what Obamacare actually is, the complication of the whole budget reconciliation process, the complexity of health care in general, and the widely held hope and belief that a Trump presidency is actually going to bring immediate change has allowed many conservatives to let their guard down. And they think, well, yeah, of course, now we have the, you know, the Congress and the presidency, we're repealing it. What they actually plan to do, unless there's a major grassroots revolt, is to only repeal the funding mechanisms of Obamacare. Those are the subsidies, the tax increases, the requirement to purchase health care. They're all bad things, but the meat and potatoes, the turkey, so to speak, not just the stuffing and the cranberry sauce, is the coverage mandates, their insurance regulations that have made insurance plans actuarially insolvent, that have tripled the premiums. They plan to keep those. And then worse, they plan to use the savings from getting rid of the subsidies to create what I call Obamacare 2.0, to create another massive entitlement. So again, they're not going to repeal the main part, and then they're going to so-called replace, which the whole replace thing is a non sequitur, but they're going to replace it with another massive entitlement. I'm just telling you, this is not looking good unless things turn around.
Well, just to echo what you're saying, William Wolf, who's with Heritage Action, has written something like this. He says, Republicans are essentially about to take Obamacare and make it their own. And then he says, Nancy Pelosi said, if we break Obamacare, we own it. But right now it looks like the Republicans are simply trying to buy Obamacare outright under the ruse of repeal and replace. All right, so it is a ruse, but let's explain it a little bit better, Daniel. And this is always, you know, a tight wire. It's a problem because you understand policy on Capitol Hill better than most people. It's kind of part of your DNA because you worked there for so long. But for the average American, all the procedures and policies, even reconciliation, all of it's a mystery. So our challenge is to try to make it clear while still explaining it as thoroughly as we can. And first of all, this whole business of reconciliation, this is a budget process. It's an unusual thing. It's the way, actually, it's a loophole through which Obamacare was actually passed in the first place, isn't it, Daniel?
No, exactly. I mean, generally speaking, you de facto need 60 votes to pass something in the Senate because the minority party will usually filibuster anything they don't like as long as they have 41 members to oppose it. So the budget reconciliation process is a way of changing bad laws, programs, legislation under the veneer of cutting a budget. So, you know, the legislative process requires 60 votes, but the budget process, you could get it through with this reconciliation vote with 51 votes because, according to Senate rules, you can't filibuster a budget reconciliation bill. Now, Republicans are making some sort of excuse saying, well, the parliamentarian who kind of, you know, gives advice as to what procedures follow the rules of the Senate is going to tell you that you can't repeal the insurance coverage mandates in the bill. And it just, without getting into the weeds, as a top line, it makes no sense that a parliamentarian could serve as a judicial review office. They're unelected. It's like the CBO, the Library of Congress. They're offices that serve at the pleasure of the majority party. They could fire the parliamentarian. They can overrule the parliamentarian with a simple majority vote. It's just good to have institutionally as someone who's going to give advice. But if you disagree with the way they implement a certain rule, you're not going to allow that to get in the way of saving one-fifth of our economy.
So, in other words, Daniel, this sounds like the modus operandi of the Republican leadership is always to take the path of least resistance. So that it sounds like, now, unless I'm misreading this, they've created a way to put like the blame or the onus, the responsibility on some person that is not elected, that they can, it sort of takes it off their backs and puts it on that parliamentarians when it's not appropriately there, right?
You hit the nail on the head here. The problem is they always choose the path to least resistance. But in this case, it's actually going to backfire on them. Because here's the problem. As it stands now, and Trump was right in his tweet there, the American people know exactly where to pin the blame on. They're going to pin the blame on the donkey, the tail on the donkey there. It is the Democrats own Obamacare. Everyone knows why premiums are skyrocketing. Republicans are, for some reason, sitting there all nervously, you know, like watching an inferno and saying, man, we got to be careful how we put out the fire. Maybe we have to have a restoration plan before we put it out. No, you put out the fire. Because if they don't fully repeal it, if they go along with this current plan, you're going to have something called adverse selection. In other words, by keeping the restrictions on the ability of insurance companies to provide affordable plans, but on the other hand, cutting off the subsidies, the individual mandate, and the tax increases, so you're cutting off the funding sources, you're actually going to make it even more insolvent because, you know, they can't offer normal plans, but they don't get the subsidies to recoup their losses. So premiums might even go up more, and then Republicans actually will own it because the media will say, look, Republicans repealed Obamacare, when in fact they really didn't repeal most of it, and look, the premiums went up, so they were wrong about the whole issue. This is the pitfall that we're going to, you know, fall into unless we change things.
Hey, Daniel, you know, Dr. Tom Price is now the head of HHS, and he's passionately campaigned. I've interviewed him more than once early on about repealing Obamacare, and he has his own plan that he's suggesting as a replacement. He has been, in the last few years, part of leadership. I've seen him cooperate with leadership. So this little wrinkle I don't quite get. Is he in favor of repealing completely and replacing or not?
Oh, boy. I mean, Sandy, that's a tough question to answer with Price, but in terms of all of leadership in general, this is the problem with everything. Republicans say in general they're for limited government. They're for cutting spending, and this is they're for free market health care. They want to repeal Obamacare. But then when it gets down to the specifics, they really fundamentally adopt the philosophy of the left on health care. That's the problem. I mean, this is kind of like the Elijah Mount Carmel moment, you know, where he said, look, you know, stop straddling the fence, or you're with God or you're with the ball. And that's the thing. They say they're for free markets, but then they say, well, we have to pursue universal coverage, pre-existing conditions. You know, I don't like Obamacare, but I like the pre-existing condition mandate. The pre-existing condition mandate is 90% of Obamacare. That is what has tripled premiums. That is what has made plans actuarially insolvent. So you either believe in the market or you don't. The problem is they don't fully believe in it. They don't fully understand it. And, you know, rather than pursuing lower costs and lower prices and more choice and competition and limiting and isolating the problems of those that are perpetually sick, they seek the Democrat goal of, which is utopian and elusive, of universal coverage. And then you know what happens. You get neither universal coverage nor lower costs. You get higher costs.
Well,
we're just going to wind up with Obamacare Lite.
We could always point to Romney here, the precursor of Obamacare, Romney the Republican, who decided to use state mandated health care in his state, and it was supposedly such a great plan. And what happened was, after they implemented it, it just swallowed up money and revenue, and Massachusetts couldn't keep up. And of course, what did they do? They had to turn to the federal government to cover what they had promised to their people. So you and me, wrote out the checks for the health care of the people of Massachusetts because of Romney Care. Because the whole nature of this, you cannot possibly provide everybody with every health service they need for free. What happens is you have to turn them away. You have to reject them. You have to say no. People have less freedom to choose. It really is. It's not free market enterprise. But Daniel, let's separate our discussion a little bit. Maybe this will help. Could Obamacare really, from your perspective, be totally repealed?
Of course it could be. The same way a fire could be extinguished. You know, we're not talking about ancient history, 50 years. We're talking about 3 years ago, I was paying $430 a month for a plan that covered our basic needs and had a $5,000 deductible for, you know, more catastrophic stuff, like, you know, emergency room. Now I'm paying $1,200 for something that covers absolutely nothing until you meet the $13,000 deductible. Of course, that could be repealed. You tell insurance companies, we're not going to subsidize you, but we're not going to regulate you. You could offer any plan to any person under any circumstance. You expand HSAs that, you know, puts the keys to insurance in the hands of the individual, where you make smart choices. There's a lot of other very good free market ideas on the supply side of healthcare. And you could, you know, roll back rates to lower than they were before Obamacare. But certainly it's garbage in, garbage out. And as far as the budget reconciliation process, you could do it in one line. You could repeal the entire law and score it as a net budget savings, which it absolutely is. You can't deny that. It's a massive entitlement. And it meets the criteria for budget reconciliation. This is an excuse because Republicans don't understand healthcare policy. They never really have, and they're scared of it. And they just want this as a political football to blame Democrats. They don't actually want to solve the problem. They want to just have the issue around. Unfortunately for them, it's going to backfire, and they're going to get blamed for rising premiums.
Daniel, I just heard a sort of a briefing from a member of the Freedom Caucus yesterday, and he was saying that the Freedom Caucus is going to take a hard line on this, and it's going to be hard because the leadership has already written the rules before the Congress even came back into session. These behind closed door, I'm not saying it's illegal, but it is unseemly that they had those that are leading, who are leading us very badly in the House and Senate, have written the reconciliation rules, and they were just sort of presented so that there's like no discussion about how to do this. And of course, the rules are ultimately going to provide for, it looks like, we're going to get into this in a second on the other side of the break, keeping many of the taxes in place, keeping the revenue, and just doing minimal changes, and like telling everyone we have to phase this in over the course of several years. And it's the position of the Freedom Caucus that no way, Jose, it has to be repealed right now. I want to know what you think about that when we return. My guest is Daniel Horowitz. Again, he's the senior editor of Conservative Review. And by the way, he's written a great piece about this, which we will put on our Facebook page because I know you'll be eager to read and pass it on. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. The day begins. Gotta run. Late start. Quick breakfast. Wish I hadn't stayed up so late last night. What about time in devotions? Time in prayer, Bible reading, working, thinking, breathing without the mind of Christ to begin the day is so unwise, but so like us as human beings, prone to wander. We tend to think our way is the way, yet our ways are not His ways. That's why we need to stop and take time at the start of each day seeking God's help, His correction, His leading, as we prepare to live for Him, not for ourselves. Devotions, time with God, praying for God's help, grace, mercy, and direction. Not taking time with the Lord is, to start your day, compromised. Seek first the kingdom of God, dear friend, and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hi, my name is Alex McFarland. The Word of God in the life of a believer is one of primary and vital importance. The Word of God tells us that we are to read the Scripture, believe and know the Scripture, and share those Scriptures with others. On Exploring the Word, we're helping listeners rise to the challenge of this, to hide God's Word in their heart and to live a life honoring and fruitful for the author, Jesus Christ.
Exploring the Word, weekday afternoons at 3 Central on AFR Talk.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 1,790 families have had their homes rebuilt because of you, the listener at American Family Radio, when you've partnered with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims to no fault of their own who lose everything to see volunteers show up and help them rebuild. 2 years ago, we started a rapid response division that goes within 72 hours and since then have gone to 15 communities across America. Would you consider becoming a part of 8 Days of Hope as we continue to look for ways to grow the ministry in 2017, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well. Please continue to pray for the ministry as we look forward to what God has in store for us. Thank you so much for your prayers, your financial support, and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
AFR urges you to support the ministry of 8 Days of Hope at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A much-publicized hearing in the Senate Armed Services Committee today may or may not provide much insight into Russian cyber warfare and influence operations. Either way, that focus could amount to a dangerous deflection if Chairman John McCain plays into the hands of those wanting us preoccupied with alleged Kremlin hacking of Democratic operatives' emails and ignoring the strategic significance of Vladimir Putin's other, largely unchallenged and unmistakably malevolent activities. As a new book entitled Putin's Reset makes clear, the Russian dictator is increasingly relying upon foreign adventurism and playing to nationalistic fervor to prop up domestic support for his regime. Putin's massive nuclear buildup, repeated threats to use such weapons, and increasingly provocative projections of power constitute real and present dangers that Congress and the incoming Trump administration cannot safely ignore. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The Republican plan to cut health care wouldn't make America great again. It would make America sick again and lead to chaos instead of affordable care. Republicans would create chaos in the health system because they're stuck between a rock and a hard place and have no idea what to put in place of the Affordable Care Act.
That's Chuck Schumer. This is just a taste of what we have to look forward to for the next, 6 years, maybe. Chuck Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate. But, of course, we're going to make America sick again. That's just the kind of slogan they come up with, which is actually always false. But they'll stick to it, and it will have its effect on a lot of people. But I think some people are just not buying this. Can we forget how Obamacare was passed just through the dead of night and how huge the bill was and how Nancy Pelosi said, we'll know what's in it once we pass it? Can we forget that Jonathan Gruber, the guy who wrote the bill, said in a video that we saw later that it passed only because of the stupidity of the American voter? Can we forget that the Congress shoved this thing through, the Democratic Congress? Can we forget that it went to the Supreme Court and that John Roberts, in order to pass it, decided to declare that this is a tax and not a mandate, that the forcing people to buy it was a tax, which was a huge stretch, completely unfathomable for a Supreme Court justice to do that? Can we forget that millions of, well, thousands, I don't know how many, let's just say thousands, tens of thousands of Americans have borne the burden of skyrocketing costs, as Daniel described in his own personal life, of deductibles that are just unbelievable, of businesses struggling to, you know, pay these onerous taxes and fees and all of this. And so you'd think that the leadership in the House and the Senate would actually mean what they said when they tell you they want to repeal it, but they don't, because they are liars. I have to say, I can't think of a nicer word. They lie. They lie all the time. And President-elect Donald Trump is going to have to figure that out. He is dealing with men who have no character, whose word means nothing, who will undercut him anytime they can, and it's there to their advantage. That's the way I see it. Daniel Horowitz, my guest. By the way, Daniel is the author of Stolen Sovereignty, and he's the senior editor of Conservative Review. He also has a podcast himself, which we'll link to on our Facebook page so you can see, because Daniel has, he's probably an encyclopedia, from my perspective, of information almost on a daily basis. So, Daniel, back to the repeal. Okay, you say without question we can repeal, but then there is the issue of replacing. And you hinted at this, and I find myself musing about this. You know, I have to say, my husband and I go to Mayo Clinic. That's where we go for our medical care once a year. It is the most remarkable medical system you have ever experienced. It is stunning the way they run things and the great care that they give. And they have some reasons for that. My point in mentioning that is, if the free market, if a Mayo Clinic were allowed to be turned loose and to be, sort of think up ways that communities could be served medically, I think we would see something we've never seen before, even from the medical care that we were getting when I was growing up. Your thoughts about free market solutions?
No, absolutely. You know, what liberals always do is they plant a time bomb in a very sector of the economy. It blows up, but people forget, you know, why it blew up. And they say, look, it's unaffordable. Now you need government help. And conservatives look at the source of the problem and say, hey, why are certain things expensive? Why is there an inflationary pressure on this product or service? And you look at across healthcare, and there's almost no free market left. And this was true even before Obamacare. And that's why when we talk about replace, when I talk about replace, I mean something very different than when the Republicans say. We don't need to replace Obamacare. You need to replace Obamacare the same way you need to replace a fire. I mean, you don't replace it. The question is, even before Obamacare, when premiums were much lower, they could have been even lower. The supply side of healthcare could have been lower. There's a lot of innovative ideas allowing healthcare extenders, like PAs and nurse practitioners, to do more, but they're regulated too much. You have, you know, telemedicine, where, you know, you have you know, basic symptoms of strep throat or things like that, or really, you know, ear infections. And you can do telemedicine, but there's a lot of regulations on that. You have, you know, problems with, you know, also with illegal immigration. Why do you think you go to a hospital, you get a Band-Aid, all right, that will be $300, because they're flooded with illegal immigrants. So that, you know, that needs to be taken care of there. There's a great idea to reform the law that requires emergency rooms to service, you know, anyone for any reason. And, you know, obviously we want people who have an emergency, no matter what, to be treated, but those that use it for their primary care and, you know, don't pay, you know, they could say goodbye. We could reform those laws. There's a lot of good ideas, but you've got to get rid of the fire first. For example, there's another obscure part of our Obamacare that has prohibited the concept of physician-owned hospitals. physicians can't own a hospital. I mean, so that also crushes innovation. That's got to go. So that's the point. The point is you cannot restore something or even, you know, put on an addition and beautify your home if there's a raging fire. You got to put the fire out first.
Daniel, let's get specific. We have, you know, I've cast these broad dispersions against the Republican leadership without really getting specific. They are actually trying to keep parts of Obamacare. Let's talk about that first. And some of that is the Cadillac tax, the taxes. Talk about that. The egregious things they, you say they just want to get rid of little things, not the big things. Explain that.
So again, the big thing is what we call there's the insurance coverage mandate, not to be mixed up with the individual mandate, the requirement to purchase it, but the requirement that insurance companies, A, have to cover everyone even after they got sick and didn't have insurance before, right? It sounds like a great idea, but that is what is responsible for, you know, unaffordable premiums. It's like saying a fire insurance company has to cover fires after the person already had the fire and didn't have insurance. I mean, it's just not actuarially sound. Then community rating. The fact that not only do you have to cover it, but you have to offer them the same price as everyone else. I mean, there's one thing to say, look, I'll cover it for a higher price. But no, you have to cover it for the same price as the community. So we all get stuck with higher costs. And then there's the scope of coverage mandate. So, you know, you can't have tailor-made plans, so a single male has to have OBGYN coverage or sex change operation coverages or who knows what else. That is being kept. That is not being repealed in the budget reconciliation bill. What about the taxes? Bill Cassidy of Louisiana wants to keep the revenue of the so-called tax on Cadillac insurance plans, the high-end insurance plans, because he wants to use that revenue to create his own massive new entitlement of refundable tax credits to replace Obamacare when, in fact, they're not replacing the mandate. So just to give your listeners a sense of what's going to happen, they're going to keep the high prices because of the mandate, but now they're going to have their own subsidy program to replace the subsidies they're getting rid of, and they need the tax revenue in order to fund it. This is a three-ring circus. It's making Obamacare great again.
You know, I think... Daniel, I guess the best way to help people to understand this, if we could create a soundbite, we're not as good as the left is, but we can do this. It's repeal Obamacare fully and repeal it now. Now. Repeal it now. Fully. Completely. Now. That's the issue, is it not?
That is the issue. And let me just tell you, practically, procedurally, policy-wise, that is the only way you're going to get rid of it. If you're just going to say, look, I'll get rid of the funding mechanisms, and then when we get the replacement plan ready, then we'll get rid of those other mandates. A, politically, that is never going to happen because they just don't want to, and they're certainly not going to get the courage to do it later. But also, don't sit and tell me, well, Daniel, you know what? I don't like Obamacare, but I like the pre-existing condition mandate. Then you like Obamacare. That is 80%. That is exactly what is responsible for most of the increase in premiums. So you can't have it both ways. But again, this is semantics because Republicans are calling the requirement to purchase health care, they're calling that Obamacare. But that's just, it's tyrannical, it's unconstitutional, but that's not the heart and soul of the policy of Obamacare. So there's a lot of confusion here because health care is so complicated.
You know, I also want to interject, from my understanding, there were already, I don't know if they still exist or not, high-risk pools for people with really serious conditions that were so costly. And there were ways that those problems were being dealt with before Obamacare. And there are methods, there are ways that there could be high-risk pools that don't suck in the entire population of the United States. So there are ways. It's not that there's no avenue to set up something independent of the government that would provide for people that have serious illnesses or pre-existing conditions. So the Cadillac plan—that's the other thing. That's they want to keep the taxes, they want to keep the money, the revenue, and they want to get. But that's kind of like under the table. They're not saying that publicly, are they?
No, they're not. They're not. It's very hard to message. The same guys get up there and say, we are repealing Obamacare. It's the same way they say we oppose amnesty, and then they propose amnesty.
Yes.
Or we oppose Common Core. This is a big one. They all oppose Common Core, except they support the federal intervention and the testing requirement or the the benchmarks for the states. So they'll just call it a different name and rearrange the deck. That's what I'm saying. At its core, what Obamacare is regulating insurance companies to offer actuarially insolvent plans and then coming with government subsidies that are unsustainable to go and, put the Band-Aid on that. They are keeping most of the mandates, and they're going to have their own subsidies that are just different that they're going to pay for by retaining some of the tax increases.
Well, all
so
I can
call
say,
whatever you want.
All I can say is over our dead body, and that's why we're talking about it, because it's time for conservatives to rise up again. Daniel, you're not a fan of the Trump administration. You were a total non-supporter, but I know that you are an honest broker, so I'm curious to know what you think about where, did I say Obama? I meant Trump. What Donald Trump is going to come down on this. He made a lot of wanting to repeal and replace Obamacare. He promised he was going to do that. Where do you think the Trump administration is headed on this? And do you think they recognize the games that the leadership is playing?
This is a big open question. The administration is kind of all over the place. There's a lot of good people they brought in, some not so good people, some Bush people. It's very much wide open. And the thing for conservatives now, it's not whether you oppose Trump or support him. He is the president. It's you can't be like a liberal and hope for change. You have to ensure of change. You have to actualize the opportunity. So we can't just say, oh, Trump's president, he's going to repeal Obamacare. We have to apply the pressure. Trump is always very open to hearing from a variety of different voices. The question is, is it more the people like Steve Bannon who have his ear or people like Reince Priebus? And you're already seeing some of this kind of schizophrenic movement, and he goes both directions. And that's the thing. We need the good people to win out. So I would say the jury is still out on that, and that is really up to the grassroots to make their voices heard.
Won't it be something if he uses a tweet to sort them out? I mean, it's just amazing, that whole business about doing away with that ethics committee, which I talked about that yesterday, Daniel, on the air. And to me, the most important thing for people to understand is that the leadership actually changed their decision based on a tweet from Donald Trump. So he is going to have influence on them. And I just wonder if he comes down the right way on this, if they will actually do what they have promised over and over again for the last 8 years to do. What do you think?
I actually was very heartened by that tweet about the ethics office and how quickly he blew it up, because that told me that Trump is still willing to buck his own party. So there's a lot to harness there, and I think people like Mark Meadows, who is the chairman of the conservative caucus in the House, he has an opportunity to work with him, and rather than having Reince Priebus drive a wedge between Trump and conservatives, to try to work it the other way around. And I also think Mike Pence is the real player here, because Trump doesn't really know a lot about policy, political issues, and Pence is going to be a very powerful VP. He has a lot of pre-existing relationships with House members, even Senate members. He's very well respected. It really depends on him. He needs to step up to the plate and say, this is not good enough. You need a full repeal plan right now, and then we'll talk about replacement later. If he doesn't give that signal, I can tell you this much. The leadership within Congress is not going to come from there. They have not changed one iota from
All
this
right.
election.
Okay, Daniel Horowitz, a good friend and a great contributor to the discussion every single time. We'll put his article, Repeal and Name Only, on our Facebook page. Daniel, thanks. Have a great day. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.